Just a word of warning, I'm getting over a cold, and if you hear some very obvious edits in this episode, it's because I was trying to spare you the sound of me trying to cough up a lung. With that said, here we go.
This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 448 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and that there on the other end of Skype is none other than Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, and we are both returned. How are you?
I just thought I'd quickly Google up how to say hello in Sri Lankan for you, so you feel more. Are you bowing? Is that it? How you going?
Yes, it is something like that.
How you going?
Awa Barwin or something, yeah.
How you going?
Yeah, I think that's
how
it.
How you going?
That's it.
It's not rather right, how you Barwin. How you going? Yeah. Nice to see ya. That works.
Yeah, that's right.
That's one of the more confusing ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
How you going?
Yeah.
Are you Bowen? So, hello. Hello. Hello, lovely listener.
Hello.
Listeners.
How you been?
You know, I've been okay.
Yeah,
I think I came home with sleeping sickness.
Right, why is that?
Because I've been sleeping a lot.
But that's your normal.
No, but like I'm talking my naps turning into sleeps.
Oh,
and my sleeps are running into my next nap, which is turning into a sleep. Which is, I'll be asleep all night.
Mm.
I'll get up, take the kids to school, come home, sleep for 5 or 6 hours.
Wow.
Get up. Pick them up from school, come home, sleep for a couple of hours.
Jeez.
Feed them, get into bed, doze on the couch before going to bed to sleep all night.
Wow.
Repeat. I reckon I've been like a cat. I've been sleeping like 20 hours a day.
Wow.
Which is most unlikely. And I'm just dead tired all the time. So
yeah, right.
Most unlike me. Not the sleeping bit, just the length of it.
Were you going pretty hard for the time you're in Tanzania?
No.
Okay.
I mean, there were moderately long days, and my personality had to be switched on most of the time, and that kind of that can tire you out.
Yep.
But I mean, you're sitting in a vehicle for most of the days, just bouncing along, so it's not particularly tiring. It's not it's not overly taxing.
Yeah.
And gorgeous beds, super comfortable beds. So I was getting, because you're in camps in the middle of nowhere, the generator goes off reasonably early, and there's no internet, there's no distractions. So you're going to sleep at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night or whatever, you know, and sleeping through to like 6. So you're getting a good night's sleep every night as well.
Yeah. Right.
So I've just come home. Yeah. And it's not jet lag. I don't get jet lag normally, and I got bitten by some tsetse flies.
Ooh.
And they apparently carry sleeping sickness. I don't think it's what it is either. Could just be purely lazy,
right.
But or watching all those big cats has made me want to live like a cat.
Yes,
which is
could
sleeping
be
20 hours a day,
could
know?
Be that.
So how was your trip? How was the fabulous Sri Lanka?
Mate, it was fantastic. It was everything we imagined. I think if there was one thing that surprised me, it was that the food didn't blow me away with its diversity as much as we thought it would. Like, we expected a lot of Indian style of curry. And what we found was that right across the whole of Sri Lanka, pretty much every single restaurant has the same 20 items on the menu.
You're going to McDonald's again, dude. You've got to diversify when you travel. I'm telling you, you can't go to Sri Lanka and order a McCurry.
No, you cannot.
A McCurry burger is just not going to wash. You know, you've got to step outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, maybe that was where we went wrong. But no, seriously, like every restaurant has basically, you know, 4 or 5 different types of meat and 4 or 5 different ways of preparing said meat. So you've basically got this same 20 or 25 odd items in every single restaurant. It was really
bizarre. How long were you there for?
In Sri Lanka itself, we were there for 15 days. And then we...
So you could have a dinner every night, have something different, but it's sort of 10 left over. What are you complaining about?
Yeah.
So problem solved. Yeah. So what you're bleating about, you know? It's like every Indian restaurant you go to has got butter chicken.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Samosa and butter chicken, you know, your safety foods.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. But was, absolutely was loved it.
Good though?
Oh, mate, it was great. It was great. Yeah. I mean, like anywhere, you got your dodgy ones and you got your good ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were trying to do it on a relative budget. We didn't want to be silly about what we were spending. So, yeah.
Because, you might not have a job.
Yeah, well, I don't at the moment.
Really?
I don't.
Gone again.
Yeah. Well, I knew
you're up and down. You're up and down like the Assyrian Empire, dude.
Mate,
you're
I know. So basically, the work I had at Newcastle ran out the day before we flew out.
Oh, that's timing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I always knew that that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
And so now it's, you know, pounding the phones every day, ringing everybody that I know, and, you know, just trying to put the word out there. And Kath was saying to me this morning, look, you might have to just go to a, you know, job agency and pick up anything that you can, you know, even if it's outside what you normally do. Which is not fun, but, you know, it's going to have to be done.
Life, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. So, and as you can hear, I've picked up a bloody cold from infected passengers on the aeroplane.
I hadn't noticed.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, the time we had there was fantastic. The people were lovely. It just seemed, I don't know if it's just everywhere that you go as a traveller, you just naturally mingle with people easier when you're in a foreign country than you do in your own turf.
Yeah, yeah.
But just really lovely people, super happy, super, super keen to look after the tourism that they've got.
Yeah, of course.
What really amazed me was how widely the terrorist attacks of Easter Sunday have affected the whole country. Like, even when we were down in the south at Yala National Park, we stayed at this beautiful resort, which was normally, you know, like $150 a night for a room, and we were getting it for $45. And there was probably half a dozen people staying in the whole resort. And I said to one of the staff, I said, is it always this quiet? And they said, well, this is our off season because it's wet season, but we're still suffering because of the terrorist attacks. And it's like, that's 300 kilometres away from here. And they said, but it's affected the whole
country.
Same country.
When you're planning your next trip to Iraq.
Yeah. That's what I said to Kath. I said, I think we'll just go wherever there's been terrorism because it's always safe to go straight after an attack. So
I'm not quite sure that logic applies, but...
Yeah.
And from what I hear, things are building up in Sri Lanka for worse or more to come.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm being led to believe by people who should know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What we found was that, you know, there were certainly great prices to be had because hotels were empty, tours weren't being filled. So there were all sorts of discounts on offer. And what interactions we had with business operators of any description, whether it was restaurateurs or hotels that we were staying at or whatever, they were just so happy to see you, you know, because there were so many nights.
Because you're not used to that, of course.
Yeah, well, we'd go into a restaurant, we'd be the only people there, and we'd thinking, my God, is this going to be like the place that we die in because there's, you know, horrible food? And it wasn't. It was just that there's no customers.
Yeah.
And for that reason, we never ate at any of the resorts that we stayed at. We thought, we should at least try and, you know, what little impact we can have is try and spread the money around the economy as best as we can, you know. So we always just walked out onto the street and found little restaurants and, just had an amazing time. You know, Kath loves elephants and we saw elephants, so that was good. And had a few opportunities to grab portraits of people, so I sent you a few of those to look at.
Oh, I must have a look.
Yeah, and then the Maldives at the end. Oh, man. The Maldives is everything you've ever imagined and then some.
I haven't imagined anything.
Right. Well, it's all up from here.
The only way is up.
Yeah. We lashed out on an over-the-water bungalow, which was just amazing. You know, we had black tip reef sharks. We had sea turtles. We had spotted rays all just gliding past our front door.
That's quite the buffet, dude.
Yeah, exactly. It was amazing.
You were complaining about the local food not being right.
That was shocking.
Turtles, sharks. Oh, that was Maldives. Sorry, of course.
That's right. So, yeah. So, and that was, the whole trip was just amazing. Really good.
Highlight?
I would say, as a lover of nature, the walk to a lookout called World's End in the Horton Plains.
That's my kind of place.
Yeah, in Horton Plains National Park. And everything we'd read about this place said that if you're going to do the walk, you need to do it early in the morning. The gates open at 6 o'clock, and you really want to be, you know, on the trail within the first hour, because it's an 8-kilometre loop, and it's, if you go directly to World's End, like if you take the shorter leg to World's End, that's about 3 kilometres, you may or may not get a clear view, because it generally only clears for a, you know, a brief window in the morning, and then it tends to cloud over again.
Yeah.
And this view is amazing. Like, you stand on the edge of an 800-metre precipice, and you can see these tiny little villages way down in the bottom of the valley below you. And at the same time, you're looking out beyond mountain ranges to a horizon which is 40, 50 kilometres away, because you're up so high. Because you're up at over 2,000 metres altitude at this lookout. And so we, because we had a hire car, we were able to get to the gate to the national park at 6 o'clock, like we were there at 10 to 6. And it just so happened there was a backpacking couple, a young couple from the Netherlands, who were staying at the same place we were staying at the previous night. And I said to them, are you guys doing the walk to World's End? And they said, yeah, we are. We're doing that tomorrow. And I said, have you got, how are you getting up there? And they said, oh, we haven't thought about that yet. And so I said, well, you know, if you guys can squeeze in, you know, you can jump in the back of the car. And they went, oh, that's great. Thank you. You know, so the four of us hung out for the day. And, we got to the gate. We were the first ones through the gate. You then have another 5-kilometre drive to the car park, and we parked the car. Then you go through the security checkpoint where what they do is they check everything you have that is plastic. And if you've got water bottles, that's okay, but they cut the plastic labels off the water bottles because they don't want that crap being left in the park.
Yeah.
And so we were the first ones on the trail, and we were actually the first people of the day to get to World's End. So I got to take, you know, some good shots of World's End before it got crowded with other, you know, tourists, you know. And sure enough, we got there and we looked out, and you had no idea how far you were seeing because all we could see was cloud. And I was like, well, this is disappointing. Yeah. And then seriously, within 30 seconds, it was like, oh, there's a glimpse of a mountain. And then within 2 minutes, it had completely opened up. I could see Udawalawa Reservoir, which is about 40 kilometres away to the south. And it was just phenomenal. So I, you know, madly shot panos and HDRs while I could. And sure enough, within about 8 or 9 minutes, it had clouded back over and it then started raining. Oh. And so we just went, okay, we're done here. Let's move on.
Seen it.
You know, see the rest of the track. Like, because the loop then takes you around to a waterfall called Baker's Falls. So we did that.
It's a good Sri Lankan name.
Yes, exactly. And then it rained all the way to Baker's Falls, which was another 3 kilometres. And so by the time we got there, I was just not in the mood for, you know, trying to muck around with filters and wide-angle lenses and, you know, or doing lens changes, put it that way. And so I grabbed one very quick shot of the falls, and then we started walking again, and by the time we got back to the car we were absolutely drenched. And thankfully we all had dry clothes that we were able to then change into. So the walk to World's End was certainly one of the highlights for me. We also were in, there's a major city in the center of Sri Lanka called Kandy, spelt with a K. And
another one.
Every full moon, they have a celebration, but the celebration in August is called Perahara, and it's quite a major festival. It goes for 9 days, and we were in Kandy for the second last night, and so we went and watched this parade, which has, you know, a couple of thousand dancers and musicians, and they dress the elephants up in these bright sort of coverings that go, you know, right over the top of the elephant, over their heads. They have a high eye holes for them so they can see. But being lovers of animals, we weren't particularly happy with the way that's done because, you know, they have their front and their rear legs tied together, which keeps them under control. And just seeing how they're, you know, they're constantly tied up, you know, constantly chained up, even when they're not on the parade. And you just think, what a miserable existence for these poor animals, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and this parade's been going on for 1,300 years, you know.
Well, that's it, yeah. So they've been tied up that long.
Exactly, exactly.
It's no wonder they're unhappy.
Yeah.
But thankful that they're living such a long life, I guess. Yeah, it's a trade-off.
That's right.
You can live a long time, be unhappy. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the safari we did down at Yala National Park was really cool. The guy that we had as our tour guide was a third-generation tour guide, and he himself has been doing it for about 17 years, and he explained to us that a lot of the other tour operators are guys who were, you know, fishermen or tuk-tuk drivers or whatever, up until the end of the Civil War about 10 years ago, around 2009. And then when tourism really started to explode after the Civil War ended, they all kind of jumped on the bandwagon of running these safari tours. And he said, you know, a lot of them don't have the wealth of experience that myself, my dad and my grandfather have.
Yeah.
He said, so they don't know the things to look out for. And honestly, this guy was amazing. Yeah, we'd be driving along. I mean, you've just done a safari, so you know it's like you're driving along, you're in the back of a four-wheel drive, it's like bounce, 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 bounce. And then all of a sudden, he'd slam on the brakes, he'd reverse up 10 metres, and he'd point out a 20-centimetre chameleon camouflaged on a tree.
Yeah.
And I was like, how the hell did you see that?
Well, it's nailed there, of course.
Yeah.
they try and make it feel special, but they're actually employed.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Employed to stay there.
Like that's animals. Right, yeah. So,
that's their job. And then try and make them look good by, you know.
And they reckon, you know, if you see a leopard, you've done well.
Yeah.
We saw 5 leopard sightings of 3 different leopards over the course of the day.
And so you saw 5 sightings.
5 sightings. So it was 3.
Where do you see sightings?
We made 5 sightings of leopards.
Because you can't. If seeing is sighting.
Yes. Okay.
So
all right.
So you're sighting.
I'm sick. Give me a break.
You're inciting all sorts of grief from other OCD people.
We made 5 sightings of 3 leopards.
So you saw 5. So you saw some leopards.
Yeah, and it was incredible. You know, we'd come to a spot where these guys, yeah, there'd be a few jeeps around, you know, where they'd seen a leopard. And our guy, Dinesh, he'd suddenly drive off. And we'd drive off, you know, turn a corner and we'd drive along somewhere and we'd pull up somewhere. And there'd be nothing. And it's like, what are we doing here? And he'd say, just watch. He said, give it about 2 minutes. He said, that leopard is going to come walking along this dry riverbed and it's going to walk right past here and into those bushes over there. And sure enough, within a minute and a half, you'd start to hear all the other trucks getting closer. And sure enough, along comes this leopard walking along the riverbed and we're in prime position because we were there first. Because he just knew the movements of all these animals and what they do.
They probably do the same thing every day. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And he was just a wealth of information. And because we had done a full day tour, you know, obviously, yeah, he obviously would prefer to sell an all-day tour because it's more money for him. But as he said to us, you know, the day before when we were talking about booking, he said, look, I highly recommend a full-day tour, not just because I make more money, but he said it means that we don't have to rush to see things because you've got the whole day. And we saw this in the morning where these other operators who were, you know, their clients had only booked a 3 or a 5 hour tour, they'd sit there and they'd watch the leopards and then suddenly, boom, they're tearing off somewhere else because they've got to try and... Exactly. Yeah. And we, you know, we would quite often just sit there a little bit longer and we would, you know, occasionally get another glimpse that, you know, everyone else had missed because they've raced off to find the next big ticket item.
Of course, yeah, yeah, tick the next thing off the list.
Exactly. And he said to us, look, we're unlikely to see elephants today, he said, because it's been really dry here and the elephants have moved north. But he then gave us recommendations because he said, where else are you going? And we told him what our basic itinerary was because, as you know, Kath and I, we pretty much wing it as we go.
Yeah.
So we had a rough plan. And he said, look, don't go to the elephant orphanage at Kandy because they are not particularly responsible. They do keep the elephants chained up and they keep them longer than they need to because it's tourism. He said, I highly recommend you make a little detour. It's about half an hour out of your way to go to this place called Uduwalaway, yeah, where they have this, what they call an elephant transit home. And it really is a rehabilitation center for elephants that are either orphaned or injured. And he said, there you will actually see elephants who are being looked after and who are released back into the wild once they reach 5 years of age. And so we did. We made that detour, went and saw that particular elephant transit home, and it was great. It was amazing the stuff that they were doing. Like, they had a fully grown male elephant who had lost his whole rear left leg, and they had a prosthetic leg for him. So you're seeing this elephant walking around with a prosthetic leg. Which was
weird.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
A pirate elephant.
Exactly. And so when they let the elephants come into the enclosure to feed, like, because they have a grandstand where everybody watches from, and they let these elephants in to feed, and they let the youngest ones in first, and there was this cute little baby elephant. It was about 5 months old. They come in, and they get fed from a 22-gallon drum some milk. And all of the elephants know that once they've had their milk, they have to go off and eat their grass. And this little baby elephant, because he's so new, he hasn't kind of learned that yet. And so he kept on trying to circle back around and get some more milk. And the handlers were always shooing him away with a broom. It was very funny to watch. So that was pretty cool. And Dinesh had all these other suggestions of things we should do and places we should go. On his recommendation, we ended up going right up to the north of Sri Lanka, to a place called Nilavelli, which had this absolutely beautiful beach. Yeah, so, I mean, look, there was so much to talk about it, but it was just a phenomenal trip. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Mm.
Awesome.
There's a couple of things that I probably should mention. One was the last of those six images that I sent you, the one of the guy in the tan suit.
Well, just the beard.
We pulled up at this place. I'd been driving for a couple of hours, and I said to Kath, oh, I feel like I need a break. So we've pulled in at this, I don't know what you'd call it. It looked like a bit of a hotel, and it was right on the side of a lake. And I said, yeah, we'll just pull in here and we'll grab a coffee and have a bit of a rest, and then we'll hit the road. And we walk in, and there's all these people dressed up, and it turned out it was the middle of a wedding.
Yeah.
And so these people have seen me with my camera, and they've suddenly started inviting me to take photos. and I was like, wow, this is surreal. Here's me, in board shorts and thongs at a Sri Lankan wedding taking photos. and that fifth or sixth photo was just one of the guests at the wedding. So that was kind of surreal.
I saw that one on Facebook when you posted it.
Right.
And I was suitably impressed.
Oh, thank you.
Not with the photo.
Right.
Just with the fact that he actually went in there and did it.
Oh, right.
which is the big thing. I mean, embracing those opportunities, because that happens all the time when you're over there, overseas.
It can,
So it's countries that you'll get swept into, all of a sudden you're the honoured guest at this event.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
And it's like, and you can see it, they're all in a happy celebrating mood, and there's this foreigner who they're happy to see, and it becomes this cool thing, and you can't be almost more important than the bride and groom, which is exactly as it should be in my case, I believe.
And then I haven't sent you any photos of it because they weren't spectacular photos, but
your photo.
Only a day later, we were at a place called Sigiriya, and Sigiriya has this rock which is either referred to as Sigiriya Rock or as Lion Rock. And it's this very interesting geological formation. It's this rock that just straight up out of the plain just pops up like a pimple. You could walk around the base. It's probably only about 300 metres around the base, but it's 250 metres tall.
Goodness.
Right? And what happened was 1,000-odd years ago, some king came along and found it and commanded his engineers to find a way to the top. And so what they did was they eventually built staircases around the side of the rock, which, you know, takes you right up onto the top. Once you get up onto the top of the rock, it's reasonably flat. Like, I mean, it's kind of tiered, but there are wide, flat areas up there.
Yeah.
Probably about, I don't know, a couple of acres in size, I guess. And they built a whole city up there. And it became his, like, his royal fortress / palace.
How many thousand steps up is it again?
1,200 steps to climb up.
Yeah.
And anyway, we did the climb up, and Kath was struggling a bit, so we took it really slowly, and we got up the top, and we got somebody to take some selfies of us, you know, and did all that.
No.
Well, not selfies, but you know what I mean. Took photos.
You just can't use the word selfies.
No.
When you're not doing your own, it's the whole word
correct.
Self.
Oh, okay. So we got someone to take a photo of Kath and I, and then I said to Kath, look, are you happy to just wander around while I race around taking photos? And she went, yeah, that's fine. So I've wandered off with my camera bag, and I was doing a lens change, and I just put my 15mm on. I was, you know, the most unfortunate choice of lenses at the time, but I just put the 15mm on, and suddenly I hear this girl screaming. And I've looked up, and they're about 15 metres away from where I was crouched down, because I'd basically crouched down in a little corner of the brickwork, like from the all these old ruins of the old fortress. There's all this brickwork up on top of the rock.
Yeah.
And I'd crouched down in a corner so as to get away from the breeze, because I wanted to minimise the chance of getting dust in the camera while I was doing the lens change. And I've looked up to, you know, to where I heard this girl screaming, and she's standing there with her hands to her face and this guy kneeling in front of her. And I've just immediately left my camera bag, bolted, had to jump up, you know, 2 3-foot-high brick walls and just start snap, 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 snap. And I'm working my way around them, just taking photos. And, of course, having to manually focus as I'm doing it because it's my manual focus lens. Right. And, of course, he's just proposed to her. And so
she's not happy about it. She's screaming.
Yeah, exactly. She was ready to throw herself off the edge, you know. I just thought, you know, spur of the moment, it was like, I've got to document this, you know, because they'll probably, you know, love to have some photos of it. And so, yeah, caught up with them later on, and I said, look, here's my email address. You know, if you want to flick me an email, I'm happy to send you the photos that I took. And so, you know, they were like super appreciative that I had, you know, grabbed some photos of the moment, you know, as quickly as I was able to get to where they were. Yeah, so it's just kind of random little things that happened on the trip like that were pretty fun. So,
well, they're the best things, I always find, that sort of the unexpected. Because you have all these expectations.
Yeah.
And it's all the unexpected that ends up being the highlights.
Yeah.
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 Which is good.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at your photos, shall we?
Sure.
So your first one is a nighttime shot.
It is.
With no redeeming features.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. There's no people in it. You're not interested.
Well, it's got statues of people.
That's right.
But, I mean, the city's got no life, and the statues hasn't got enough of an angle, and the light's not very good, and the, you know. It could have been. Was it done with your iPhone?
No.
That's because you don't use iPhones, do you? Use Android.
That's right.
So was it done with your Android?
No.
Looks like it. Right. So, yeah, that's crap. Do you like it?
I do.
Oh, well, there you are. That's all that matters, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
At the end of the day. The second one's a guy in a shop.
Guy in a shop. Oh, okay, you've got them out of order. Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
I've got them in the order you sent them.
Nah, if you sort them by file name, the one of the guy in the shop is the second last one.
I get an email, right, which displays the pictures and all this pretty boom, 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 boom in the order I get them.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorting them.
That's fine. Okay.
I haven't even taken them out of the email, dude.
Okay, so you've got a guy in a shop. Okay.
Got a guy in a shop.
Yep.
Obviously, a newspaper, convenience type.
Yeah, store. So this was just a little roadside kiosk-y thing, you know, like little wooden shack. And it was one of these guys who sold fresh fruit, you know, and we'd been driving along and I said, oh, love some fresh pineapple. So we've pulled up and went and spoke to the guy. I said, oh, can you chop it up and, you know, slice it and dice it and whatever? And he went, yeah, no worries. And while he was doing it, I'd seen the light in the shop and just thought, oh, this is just begging for a portrait. So I raced back to the car and grabbed the camera and came back and I got a couple of shots of him as he was, you know, chopping up the pineapple and doing all that sort of stuff. And then I just got him to sit down and did a quick portrait. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a lovely shot.
Thank you.
As I said, the light's really nice. I like the fact that he's kind of looking backwards over his shoulder at you. Kind of adds a different, little bit different dimension to it. Even though everything's out of focus, you can tell exactly where it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. What the story is. But as so often happens in portraiture, and I don't want to be mean, but I'm doubting you meant to do it.
Okay.
Is the little highlight of light around his ear and up the side of his skull, in the shadowed side of his face, on his left hand side of his face.
Okay.
So you can see how you got these three kind of round lights, but one of them, his ear happens to be blocking most of it, but there's a little bit of light.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then there's that little gap between his head and the wall where there's this light tone going all up the side of his skull.
Yep.
I mean, it's perfectly shaped for his head.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the angle of that light curves around the top of his skull.
Yeah.
It's perfectly curved around the ear. So you just get this lovely highlight that separates him from the background. No way did you mean to do it.
No.
You probably haven't even seen it.
No.
First thing I saw.
Right.
Because that's the sort of stuff I'm looking for when I'm shooting.
Although I didn't see it to that level of detail, I think I was at the time very conscious of not having his head over that...
big black.
The upright of the furniture against that back wall, you know, it's like part of the shelving.
Big solid black expanse.
I think, I certainly wanted to separate his head from that, but I don't think I was looking at the lights the way you were.
Yeah, can you just see how it blends in so perfectly? Like you couldn't Photoshop it in that good. Yeah, it's really cool. But it's a lovely character portrait. Yeah, you can certainly tell, you know, who he is, what he does. That he's pretty content and happy with him with his life. And so it's a lovely little portrait. Yeah, a good shot indeed. So sorry to be nice about that. Next one is I've got is a guy holding a model of a boat in front of more models of boats.
Yes. Yeah. So he was a toy maker and he makes.
Let me guess. He made model boats.
Yeah. Well, how'd you guess that?
Well, you know.
So that was down at Gaul on the south coast, and he just had all of these little toy models sitting on the brick wall, and I first started taking photos of just the toys, and then, of course, he's walked over because his shop was actually about 20 metres away, and, obviously he wanted me to buy one, which I wasn't interested in doing, but, he was telling me all about how they come apart in three pieces so that they're easy to transport and
what you need. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I got him to pose with one in his hand. Yeah.
So I'd lighten his face. His face is too dark.
I already have.
Shit.
Yes. Yes. I was trying to keep it as real as possible, and yes, I already have lightened his face by probably a stop. He was very dark.
Yeah, I'd be looking at doing a bit more. I'd pull down the highlights of the sky. Have you already pulled the highlights of the sky down?
Yeah, I have.
Man, not to see this original exposure. It must have been absolutely shite.
Well, it was a very overcast day.
Yeah, he must have been a silhouette. It must be a completely white sky, and he must be a silhouette.
Close to it.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't say he's a silhouette, but his skin is really dark.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not saying in your original exposure, it must have been, because, I mean...
I think I shot a stop under because I didn't want to blow out the sky, and I haven't, because you can still see detail in the clouds.
There's a hint of stuff there, yeah.
But yes, I have already lightened his face quite a bit.
So my three changes would be, two changes will actually do it. I would lighten his face more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a character portrait. If you can't really see the face, you're kind of losing a fair bit of that portrait.
Okay.
And I would crop tighter.
Right.
So by having the loose crop that you've got, it does a few things. It introduces those people in the background.
Yep.
Top right.
Yeah.
Which is a distraction and doesn't add to the story.
Yeah.
And it minimizes the size of the boats.
Right.
So if you were to crop in maybe to his sleeve, his short sleeve.
Yep.
It's going to make all the boats bigger.
Right.
It's going to make him more dominant in the shot.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do a quick screenshot of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it'll make the boat in his hand bigger. It'll make the boats on the wall better, bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And tells a simpler story and removes the distractions in the background, because that bit of grass in the background doesn't add to the photo.
No.
So yeah, if there's a reason for it, let's say you're doing an article, you want to put some more text down the side, you want something down the side,
yeah.
You can include more space over there, but simply for a portrait of him. So I've just messaged through to you on your phone a cropped-in version. And it's not a massive difference. I'm not making wholesale changes.
No.
But it is certainly I think it's an improvement to the shot.
Sure.
Because it's a really good shot to start with. It's a good base to start with.
Right.
Because he's interesting. The stuff he's selling is interesting. So I'll try and bring more into the sky, basically. I'll try and get more out of the sky to give it some more. And a funny thing, one of the articles you sent through, one of the is it the most overused techniques is like replacing sky or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'd replace the sky. I'd add a little bit of cloud. I'd add something up there to give it just a bit more. So in the one I've sent through, the sky's got a bit more punch. His face has got a lot more detail.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's cropped tighter and closer. So I reckon that makes a really cool shot. It's really interesting. I think the boats are really cool looking. His expression, the way he's holding it, having the sea in the background. So the story, the boat and the water, it all comes together. It's not just boats in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
I think it's a cool shot.
Thank you.
It just needs refining.
Sure.
It needs finishing.
Right.
Basically. Yeah. What else have you got in your little list of photos you've sent through here? So the next one down is the trouble and strife in an infinity pool.
Oh, yep.
Crap.
Okay.
It's good. It's just the whole point of an infinity pool is to kind of have like an endless horizon.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to drop off to a horizon.
Yeah.
So
I've got that shot as well, but I just like this angle.
Yeah, well, it's a nice snap. I think your best shot of the trip, because I'm just going to ignore that one, is the tea plucker.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The merry plucker of tea.
Yeah.
But for what reason? Ever think about what reason I think I like that the best?
Because there's a story to be told there?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Well, there is, but that's not the overriding. Look at the elements in the shot and tell me what's the most standout elements in the shot?
The tea plants and the guy.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Colour.
Okay.
What colours do you see?
Green and the sort of the turquoisey colour of his shirt and his hat.
Yeah, so look at some repetitive colour elements.
Okay.
So your foreground, green in his hand, green on his shirt, green on his head, green in the background. This repetitive colour element strengthens the shot. If he'd been wearing a different colour top, it wouldn't have worked as well.
Right.
If he'd been wearing a different colour hat, it wouldn't have worked as well.
Right.
Imagine if he had a red hat on.
Yeah, that would distract. Yeah.
Yeah, so that repetitive colour elements really strengthens the shot dramatically.
Yep.
And so it's the kind of serendipity we look for in travel stuff. Because if you go there and you've got like five people to shoot.
Yeah.
And you've got one who's got those kind of repeating elements, that's the one you want to shoot.
Yeah, right.
Because, we're talking about where it pulls and pushes it, where the eye is going to be dragged to and pushed to in a photograph. All those repeating colour elements really just adds the extra 5% here and 5% there that elevates a good shot to a great shot.
Yeah, right.
You know? If you look at the classic Afghan Girl by Steve McCurry,
yep.
Okay, forget the fact that she's got a red shawl on.
Mm.
Forget the fact that she's got an intense look.
Yep.
Look at the fact that underneath her red shawl, where there's holes in it, she's got a green top on.
Yep.
So she's got a green top on. And she's got green eyes and she's in front of a green wall.
Yeah.
To me, the reason, one of the main elements to why that shot is successful is that repetitive colour element.
Right.
If she'd been wearing a brown top underneath that or the wall, the background had been brown, I don't reckon we'd even know that photograph.
Right.
The thing that elevated that to that next level was that repetitive colour element.
Yeah, right.
And it's like when you have one column in a photograph versus a line of columns. You know, it builds the story. It builds the power of the shot by having the repeating element. So to me, that when I saw that, I think you put that online, I thought that's a corker. That I'd love to have taken that shot.
Yeah, so. Oh, wow. Thank you.
And then the last one, your bridal guy. I thought it was a great shot. I mean, is it the bride's father?
I don't know. We had such a language barrier. I had no idea who was who.
But you kind of get that feeling, though, don't you?
I do.
It conveys that feeling in the photograph straight away. Once you know that you're at a wedding, bang, the first thing you think of is he's having a child bride.
Yeah. Or,
but no, it's the bride's father, or possibly the groom's father.
Quite possibly was the father of the bride. Yeah.
Now, the only thing I would do to change this photograph is I would darken down
the high right
hand side of the right hand side of his jacket.
Oh, okay.
Not even the highlights in the background.
Right.
So just his right shoulder down his lapel.
So his right or camera right?
His right.
His right. Camera. Okay. So the shoulder further away.
Yeah. The most further because that's a brighter element.
Yep.
Your eye kind of continues past his face a little bit.
All right.
And gets pulled down again to his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if that had been a bit darker, then your eye would stay more towards his face.
Right.
So I'm just gonna do that.
And I'd probably desaturate the purple of the person in the background a little as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's just an unfortunate...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice highlight. It's good that there's a bit of highlight there. But as you say, it can be just a bit more of a pull.
Yeah.
I'm going to send that through to you as well. So I just edited that just then whilst we were talking.
Right.
I've darkened down the lapels and desaturated and darkened down that highlight at the back just a bit.
Yeah.
And have a look at it now. Yeah. When it comes through.
Yep.
It's just that lapel, that edge of the jacket being darker. Hey, it brings the tones more into line with the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I think just once again, keeps you in the spot you want to be with the photograph, which is the face.
Yeah.
I wonder if you might even lighten up slightly the closest side of the face.
Right.
Just add a little bit of a little extra brightness in there.
A bit of fill light.
Yeah, just to draw the eye. I mean, I kind of like the light and shade, but if it was an actual, if you're actually doing the photo properly, you probably want to see a little bit more of his closest eye.
Yeah.
Just as a family portrait kind of shot.
Yeah.
As opposed to an arty portrait kind of shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on your goal for the photograph. If it was me and you shooting it for this particular situation where you were just a happenstance guest, I would shoot it like you've shot it. If I was shooting it for the family, I'd shoot it with a bit more light on the face.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I was there as the professional photographer, I'd probably have had some off-camera flash and...
The natural light's gorgeous, and you're never gonna do those shots with off-camera flash.
No, but I would have just filled it in, just you know, probably a 1/28th or something, just to. You wouldn't have bothered.
Yeah, that's just farting around for trying to be clever for the sake of being clever, you know.
Okay.
So I've just sent through that shot again now with his face lightened up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so you can see the difference between an artier portrait and a family portrait, you know. So include all those photos in the show notes and just so you can see what we're talking about. But that's about the storytelling of the image, you know, the art versus the family portrait, which is, you know, what elements are important for one versus the other can be quite different. Which, if you're going to go do a photograph of someone, you've got to have an understanding about what you want the photo to say, because that would determine how you light it and... The pose and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, another good thing, your portraits are really doing really good lately. They've been awesome.
Oh, thank you.
George Yardis and I were talking on the tour. We were talking about the podcast, trying to, you know, scrape in another listener. And he mentioned the fact that he said in the 10 years I've been doing the podcast, I've said something nice about your photos once. And that was 3 weeks ago. Now we're up to two in a month. I might be delusional. Maybe I'm getting nice in my old age. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
So, well, that looks like an awesome trip.
Yeah, that's great.
hoping to get over there, just to look at doing some education for a tourism board in Sri Lanka, and trying to coordinate.
That's right, you mentioned that.
Yeah, maybe next year to go over and do something there. But now George, from my guy who came on tour, our listener who came on tour, he's leaving Pakistan at the end of next year, and he's got this, you know, luxury accommodation with cooks and cleaners and drivers and stuff. And he said, come over and we'll go and do some shooting. So now I might have to go there as well next year now.
Nice.
Which would be rather kind of cool.
Yeah.
So so many places to go, so little time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just your wife kind of gets upset if you keep leaving to go overseas to some places. Get cranky that way.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Africa next week.
And okay.
Then a week or two's time beyond that, we'll get Mr. George Georgiadis on board.
Okay.
And he can give his perspective of the trip.
Right.
Rather than me saying how awesome I am, he can do that.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Shall we cover the few stories that have come in?
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay. So this was something I saw on Facebook just must have been a week or two before I left, that I just thought was hilarious. Somebody posted this on the Sony Alpha users group on Facebook. This guy says, so funny story. Yesterday, I sold a lens to a dude. While trying it out on his A7, he saw something on his image not to his liking and decided his sensor needed an impromptu cleaning. He first tried his finger and then used a McDonald's wrapper. I kept my mouth shut, took his money, and thanked him for his business. But wow.
Why? What's wrong with that?
Nothing
should
good.
Have been, should have been a Burger King wrapper.
Yeah, definitely.
KFC?
Anyway. There you go. The other thing that I found is a link, which I will put in the show notes. For those of you who would like to post-process your photos and post to Instagram from the desktop, you can do it using Google Chrome. So I'll put that link in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out. We got a few things from Rob Coates over the last 5 weeks. One, he said, I didn't watch the video, just read the text. Somebody's out to be contrary. I think the only one I agree with is replacing skies. I never do it. And this was a video linked to off digitalphotographyschool.com about the 5 most overused photography techniques. I'll save you the pain of watching the 12-minute video, the first 2 minutes of which is just filler. Number one, he thought that there was too much blurring of water. People see water and immediately go, oh, I need my 10-stop filter and have to blur the water, and he didn't feel that that was always necessary. Number two, he thought panoramas were overused, particularly by people who just don't know how to compose a shot properly. Number three, must have foreground interest. He didn't agree with that.
Oh, the panoramas aren't great for viewing on digital media. I might agree with that, but they're freaking awesome for viewing on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because you can look around.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a panorama.
Depends whether you're talking like a 360 panable image.
No.
Okay.
No, if I shoot with my iPhone like a 180-degree pano,
yep,
and put it up on Facebook, you can look around.
Right.
Not all the way around, obviously, but you can look left to right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think panos are fabulous on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the more inclusive and more gets you more involved in a location than a normal photo does.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So he didn't agree with must have foreground interest. He think too often photographers get a bit tied up in having to have some foreground interest, and that there were instances where it was not always a necessary element. Four, he thought golden hour was overused, and that sometimes.
Oh, hang on a sec. This 4 and 5 is a different guy.
Why is it a different guy?
Well, 1, 2, and 3 is done by James, James, and 4 and 5 are James, JAYMES.
Right.
So it's a different guy. It's a different guy than 4 and 5.
I don't know where you're getting that from, because I watched
the
video.
Article.
Yeah,
from the article. I'm reading the article, okay. And it's James with a Y.
Right. Like,
James had a Y first.
Well, take it from me, who actually sat through the 12 boring minutes of the video. So number 4, golden hour, he felt that there were too many people who get hung up on golden hour, and the light, in his opinion, became more of the image than the subject matter. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, I much prefer to shoot at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a 5-degree day, because that light gives me so much better looking landscape.
Exactly. And then, of course, the fifth one was about sky replacements. He thought that it was becoming more and more prevalent, and that the skills being utilised were actually getting worse over time rather than better. So I'll reserve judgment on that. I don't know.
That's a as well, isn't it? That's just a total. I mean, some people are better at it than others.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't even know it has been replaced.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Maybe it's looking who you're looking. I can't see how it's possibly outdated to replace the sky. I mean, that's been going on for 100 years, and it's not stop.
No.
And if it adds to, and if you're not trying to tell a true story, so I think the only point is it being disingenuous is probably about the only truth statement there. So if you're trying to say this is what I saw, you're being disingenuous. But if you're just creating a nice image, then it doesn't matter what sky you put in.
Exactly. Yeah, and particularly if the sky is not changing the story, then I think it's less of a crime.
Yeah.
You know, taken out a bland sky and put in, you know, big black thunderclouds and lightning and all that sort of stuff, then you're completely changing the story. I think that's a worse crime than simply taking a dull overcast sky like in my portrait of the guy with his toy boats and maybe putting in a sky that's just a little bit more blue and whiter clouds.
Or just a few more clouds to make it a bit more dramatic.
But again,
it's only disingenuous if you say this is what I saw.
Yes. Yeah.
Having black clouds and lightning is not disingenuous if you're trying to create a mood in a photograph, and it's an artwork as opposed to a documentary photo.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing here, what do you think? Are there more techniques you think are overused in photography? Well, I think there are.
Okay.
I think doing articles for the sake of it, especially the top five, the top 10, the top 20, top three.
Yep.
The only top I've ever liked over the last few years is that top 16 podcast where we scraped in.
Yep.
That was a good top. But the rest of the tops, over the top. So James, James and James, both of you, stop with the top five. Your video is 7 minutes too long for a top five. Top five, 5-minute video. So that's my 8 cents worth.
Okay, next one was, again, from Rob. Below is a link to the 2019 Australian Geographic Nature Photographer of the Year Award-winning photos. In my humble yet expert opinion, the winner of the first prize is a lucky snap.
Oh, I love you, Rob.
And a little on the ordinary side. The judges said of it, despite seeing millions of nature photographs over the decades, we've never seen anything that remotely resembles this image.
Really?
They should definitely get out more. But as a well-known Melbourne photography workshop guru and raconteur once said, photo comps, who gives them a threepenny bit? Regards from the other side.
See, that's the most sensible thing I've heard in this podcast in a long time.
Right.
The guru bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you've never seen a whale eating a shark eating whale carcass. I mean,
yeah, and just the fact that it's shot from a drone—that's about the only thing that would make it unique.
Yeah, or less ununique.
Yeah. Anyway, and the last one from Rob was a cautionary tale for street snappers.
Oh, street photographer attacked on they were attacked on social media. They weren't attacked in the real world,
right?
But why? Why was he attacked?
He walked around taking photos of fairgoers. People noticed, became suspicious, and the police questioned Rosenthal. But doing photography in a public place is not a crime, so nothing came of it, according to the police department.
Well, two things. It's a fair go to photograph fairgoers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
If it's a fair go. And it depends. It can be it depends on where the fair's being held.
Mm-hmm.
So if the fair's been held on public streets, no problem. But the fair's in like a showgrounds or something, problem. Because one's private property, one's public property.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't just say, I'm going to go to a fair and take photos, because it depends where that fair's being held.
Okay, so it seems like I'm just scanning through the article further. It appears that he was taking photos of young girls at the fair, and a bunch of other people then took photos and videos of him and posted those on social media and said, hey, beware of this POS at the fair. He's going around taking pictures of little girls in dresses. Another poster compared his actions to child traffickers, while a third wondered whether he was a perv. Okay, so.
But hang on a sec. if let's say you go and take 300 photographs at a fair, and three of them happen to include a girl in a dress holding a cuddly toy or a balloon or whatever, because that's a cool scene.
Yep.
If all 300 are little girls, maybe
then you've got a story. Yeah.
But that's the problem again with social media. Yeah. See, people see one photo, take one element, and their own biases. And I've said this about, let's say it's a little bit about racism sometimes.
Yeah.
I had this thing in America, in Africa. I was talking to two young boys.
Right.
And great kids, Maasai kids, great kids. And we're having a bit of a laugh. And I said, ah, you boys are awesome. You know?
Yep.
And this American came over and said, oh, no, you better watch your language. You can't say that. I said, what? I said, boy. You know, but that's the thing. So context. Yeah. I said, well, hang on a sec. Are they men or are they boys? He says, they're boys. So I can't call boys boys? He goes, oh. I said, no. So you're taking your viewpoint, which is I understand the context of how boys been used in America.
Yep.
I understand the social stigma behind it. I understand the angst and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But that's your lens on the world from your environment.
Your cultural bias.
Yeah. It's not a culture. So you're actually the one being racist by hearing me say the word boys to some boys and putting a racial connotation to it.
Yep.
By trying not to be racist, he was in fact being racist.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Whether you see this one photograph, you're becoming, you're anti-pedophile to a guy who's not, I'm not saying he is or isn't, but is to something that's more than likely just innocent.
Yeah.
But you're putting your own bias and your own, this is what I think about the world, this is what I expect, onto something that has no relevance whatsoever, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's the problem with social media. You get a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when people take the viewpoint they see the world and put it on everyone else's viewpoint, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Anyway, Steve Peters sent us a link to the Dying Vocabulary of Photography, words that don't mean what you think they mean.
Oh, here we go.
So I'm not sure that there's anything really new and fascinating in this. I mean, there was one or two things I'd never heard of before, but the majority of it I was familiar with. But just words.
Yeah, but you're an expert though, Bruce.
That's it. That's exactly
right. Was there anything that actually stands out? Words that aren't used anymore. Oh, God, well, yeah.
Yeah, so
they are being used because we're using them here. I can see it. Tin type, amber type.
That's it. So a lot of them are things I was already familiar with, you know, things like what's a loop, you know, dodge and burn, develop, et cetera, et cetera. But down towards the end, there were a couple of things. One was memento mori. It was not a phrase I'd ever heard before, and it was this fad, if you like, going back 100-odd years, of taking photographs of people after they
dead
had
bodies.
Died.
Yeah.
So I'd not heard
memento
that.
Memento of the dead. Oh, that's coming back.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I've definitely know of and this style, and it was very common, 130, 140-odd years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not necessarily something that's, you look at the photograph, and if you know the stand, it's the terminology, you'd probably still use it.
Right.
But, this is an F-stoppers article, like the previous one was Digital Photography School, where people make content just to have content.
Yes.
So it's all crap. It's like a top five. The people just writing to be writing, having the name up there and to have people say, look at me, look at me, look at me, you know, which is why I don't write anything.
Yeah.
Because just look at me anyway.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to write.
And the last one, the Brady stand, I'd not heard of that before.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea.
It came from the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, exactly. So in the early days of portraiture, when, you know, you needed like a five, six, seven second exposure to get a decent image, he invented this stand which would basically hold people's heads or limbs in place for the duration of the exposure so that you ended up with a nice sharp portrait. So, yeah, that was one I hadn't heard of before. So it was cool. And then Adam sent us about five different stories over the last month or so.
Did he come on and do his version of the podcast?
No.
Should have saved him for them, shouldn't he?
He should have. Yes.
Adam.
So the first one, Lizzie Gadd's photography truly shows the difference between a selfie and a self-portrait. I kind of take issue with the title because a self E is simply a contraction of self-portrait. But anyway,
exactly.
I understand what they meant by this story.
Can I just say DIYphotography.net, writing for the sake of writing,
well,
pedantic for the sake of pedantic.
Maybe.
We all know there's a difference between a selfie holding the phone up and going yes. snap and doing something arty.
Yes.
You don't need to write a whole friggin' article about it.
Well, they're great images. I like the collection of images.
No problem with the images. I've got no problem with the images.
Okay.
I have a problem with the story.
Right.
The story is completely pointless.
But how would we know about it if we hadn't had the story? Unless we'd...
Well, how would you know the difference between a selfie and a self-portrait? Or
no.
How would we know about the
How
images?
Would we know about the work of the Lizzie Gadd?
Well, how about, hey, look at this awesome photo from Lizzie Gadd and show the photos. Maybe interview Lizzie and say, Lizzie, can you give us some tips about how you create your images?
Yeah.
How much of it is composite versus reality?
Yeah.
What's the length of post-processing time per image?
Yeah.
Yeah, how many elements do you add to the image outside of the initials? Show us a before and after of your images.
Yeah.
No. Talk about Lizzie Gadd as a great artist, not as someone that uses an excuse between a selfie and a self-portrait.
Okay.
See the difference? Yeah. So see, you're firing me up now.
Okay.
That's three for three crap articles. This is the sort of journalism. This is the sort of articles you'd expect. If I was doing the research,
right?
Now, come on, people. I expect more from our listeners than this.
Next one is about Panono. This is a company who created a panoramic camera of sorts that shoots 360-degree panos. And when they initially launched on Indiegogo back in 2013, they offered for free the stitching of these 360-degree panos, and it's all done via a cloud-based service that they operate off their servers. And they've now turned around and gone, this actually costs us a lot of money to do, so a month from now, it's going behind a paywall, and it's going to be 0.79 of a euro for every image you want stitched. And some people have taken issue with this because they've spent £1,700 to buy the camera, and now the only way to stitch the images is via a paid service, which was offered free at the time of the campaign. So there's a feeling that the customers are being held hostage by Panono because, you know, there is no offline way of processing these images. There's no downloadable software so you can do it yourself. The only option is to send it to them and have them stitch it. So
there's an alternative.
What's that?
Well, the company goes bankrupt and you can't do anything with them.
Yeah, there's that too.
That's the only alternative. But they're saying basically is the volume, they can't sustain the cost of doing it, whatever that may be, and maintain business. So we've got a choice. We can start charging you or go out of business.
Yeah.
Either way, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pay up or don't have anything to take photos with. And once again, this is a Kickstarter campaign
Indiegogo
Kickstarter where, you know, you pay your money, you take your chances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you even end up with a product at the end of it that's usable for any period of time, you've probably done better than most Kickstarter Indiegogo type projects.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So anyway. Next one, photographer 3D printed a 300mm extension tube for 5x macro photos. I thought this was really cool. I haven't read the whole thing, but basically he's taken the two sides of the lens mount where your lens attaches to the camera body and built those into the opposing ends of a 300mm 3D printed tube. And he's got himself a 5x macro lens, which I think is really awesome. Obviously,
stupid.
Why stupid?
Well, you get a bit of pipe.
Yeah.
You get a T-mount on one end.
What's a T-mount?
Well, it's an adapter to put lenses onto cameras.
Okay.
So basically, you could make this for $5 or $10 out of accessories.
Oh, okay.
Or go and buy a 3D printer, use God knows how much 3D plastic bloody tape or whatever it is they use. I mean, he's doing nothing new other than except he's used a 3D printer. And now look at me.
Oh, another, okay.
See, Petapixel. We've done all, we've got Petapixel, DIY photography, F-stoppers, and digital photography school.
Okay.
Yeah. Just go to DIYphotography.net.
Yeah.
You'll find all sorts of stuff like this to make extension tubes and do stuff like that without going to go to the effort of
3D printing.
Okay, maybe it makes it a bit more robust.
Yeah.
But, you know, because you can doesn't mean you should. Well, he should have made it modular as well. So it screws apart. So you have like a 2x, a 3x, a 4x, a 5x.
Right.
Based on how modules you stick together.
Oh, yeah.
You can see how that could be a bit more. Yeah, use versatile.
Yep.
Because how many times do you need something quite that powerful?
Yeah.
You know, and look how unwieldy it is too. It's
yeah.
massive. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to be shooting on a tripod for sure.
Yeah. So having maybe the option to do multiple lengths and keep stacking lengths is yeah. Maybe
that's V2. I would imagine that at some point that there must be a point at which if the tube gets too long, then even your minimum aperture wouldn't provide you enough depth of field. Would I be right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, even with a standard macro lens,
yep.
if you're close enough, I was shooting a butterfly's head
yep.
a couple of years ago at f32.
Right.
And I'm getting half the butterfly's head in focus.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's why most of these macro guys use focus stacking.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, if you're going to try and focus stack with this unwieldy beast, good luck.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, you got to focus stack maybe 40 or 50 images if you want the whole butterfly head to be in focus.
Yeah, right. How do you get enough images fast enough with the...
Well, that's the problem. You want the butterfly to be dead.
Yeah, right.
Ideally, and in no wind. And that's the thing. I mean, it's tricky. Otherwise, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've done a few focus stacks in my time, and they're a bit of fun. They're, yep. they're a cool end look.
Yeah.
But as you say, if that sucker moves even a tiny bit,
yeah.
Job's over, start again, and I hope it doesn't move during the second version.
Yeah. Next one, photo flash bombs were once used to light nighttime aerial photos.
Well, here's something new. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah.
This
is cool. So I'm assuming this was during wartime. They would basically create these bombs that were massive flash bulbs.
This is one serious off-camera flash, right?
Really. Yeah. Absolutely. And it would, you know, go off, illuminate the landscape, and then allow the pilot of the plane to get photographs of the landscape at nighttime, which obviously then aided the guy who was dropping the bombs to drop them in the right spot.
And why have we never heard of this before?
I don't know.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Something different.
Ingenuity. Adam, you've come through with the first good article of the day.
And the last one from Adam was that Canon DSLRs are vulnerable to ransomware. Update yours now.
I'm just going to hold my camera to ransom.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, unless you pay me money. Canon's going to shoot low-res JPEGs.
Canon has issued an official security advisory for its Wi-Fi-connected DSLRs after a security company showed that they could remotely hack into and install ransomware on a Canon 80D. Yeah. How likely that is to happen to you? I'm thinking you've probably got a better chance of winning the lotto.
Yeah. Because you'd have to be within the zone of the person going around with the thing to do the thing that does the thing. And then, so basically, it encrypts all the photos in your SD card and holds hostage till you pay them money.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. I mean, for the people out there doing it, I mean, that's showing some ingenuity.
Yeah. I am dying here. I'm calling it quits.
You're done like a dog's dinner?
I am.
That's all right. Well, we've done all right. We've talked for a fair while. We've rabbited on.
Yep.
We haven't even talked about how epic my trip was, which is, you know, shat all over yours.
Yeah.
as it does. Transfer money, add fire. I'm going to do one.
What are you transferring money for?
Well, I'm looking, you can transfer money through Skype now. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a little thing that you can share the chat or send money.
Feel free to send me some. We can make sure that it works.
just give it a try and see how it goes. So I was still in need of looking through a significant amount of my photos for Africa because it's slow going. We saw some epic stuff. We had some incredible experiences. One thing I will say, we had the and I don't say this lightly. We had the best group of people. You could imagine.
Yeah, cool.
And we also had George Georgiadis.
Excellent.
But we had 25 people in this group over our 5 tour leaders. And over 10 days, Not one person was late for one pickup, for one meal, for one anything.
That's awesome.
Not one time did anyone need to be reminded to hurry up or go find someone. Which is unheard of.
Yeah. You know?
And that kind of respect for others and desire to get out and be, you know, shooting good stuff was just bloody wonderful. So as far as stress goes, it was almost as stress-free as you could possibly imagine when dealing with a large group of people. So
nice.
So I'll get some photos together and we'll send them through next week and we can chat about them and I'll share a couple of experiences and then we can get George to come on and say what his viewpoint from, yeah, versus, and this is what I'll be interested to find out. So here's your homework, George. What's his expectations before the trip? What he was hoping to get? What did the trip provide versus, yeah, did it satisfy those? Did it exceed those? Yeah, all that kind of stuff will be interesting to hear. So, yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right, mate.
Well, you go cough up your other lung.
Yep.
And hopefully things on the job front sort themselves out rather quickly. And,
yeah, you know, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, mate. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm going to go home with that.
Okay, mate. You do that.
Bye, everybody.
Shutters Inc. Another audiotu.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersinpodcast.com.